Good morning, and thank you so much for listening. Full version of the intro song, yes. I apologize to you, Jeffrey, but I did say every couple of months, once or twice out of every 10 episodes, might still play the original version because I'm proud of it, right? And I had it commissioned by a professional musician, Rochester's own Elvio Fernandez, keyboardist from the Daughtry Band, actually commissioned that song, made it. It's a unique song. And so once in a while, I'm like, man, let me get my money's worth, you know? Although if I were you, I'd be like, man, you've been playing that song for 5 years. You've gotten your money's worth. but anyway, I appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Happy end of school to you. Yes, it was. They go late in Rochester. I grew up in Ohio. School was out first week of June. Obviously, college is like early to mid-May, you know, but public school, New York State, is this late. Wednesday, June 25th was the last day of school in and around Rochester. And I think there's even some kids, some of the ones who have those state exams, I think around here they call them regency exams. Back in Ohio, at least when I was a kid, they were called proficiency tests. I think that there's kids in school even all the way up until this past Friday, the 27th, which is insane to be in school up until almost the 4th of July. Absolutely insane. But I will say one thing. In New York, at least, they don't go back until Labor Day. I don't know if there's any examples. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I'm not talking college. I'm just talking public school, high school and below, that they, for the most part, everyone is back to school Labor Day or later. I think they almost all go day after Labor Day or day after the day after Labor Day. I think they try to kind of go every other day so it's not everybody back all at once. But anyway, yeah, so it's Leo got off the bus. Of course, my wife, the two moms, we have 4 or 5 kids on our block, all who go to that elementary school. And so my wife got together with the other moms and they rented a bouncy house, got confetti guns, water squirt guns, which I, what did I find out? You're not allowed to call them guns, either one, by the way. I just used the word gun twice. Confetti guns and squirt guns are now called, it's a confetti rocket, which is funny to me because rockets like worse than a gun, but I get it in the, you know, popular vernacular, maybe gun is worse. And then there is the squirt guns are not squirt guns anymore. They are now squirters. Yes, squirters. We don't use the word gun. I got yelled at for that several times. Anyway, they went all out and ordered pizza and wings, and like they had this end of school party, which is really sweet and adorable. It really is, but it's just like I don't remember that ever having been the case, you know, getting off the bus or getting picked up for my last day of school, that there was a party. But you know what was so sweet about my son, my 6-year-old Leo, who, if you remember and you scroll back months and months ago when he first started school, I told you he had a really hard time going to school back in September. He did not have a good first day. He didn't have a good first few days. And even up until, and Ryan would correct me here, but I think even up until a couple of months in, he would have the odd day here and there where he would cry, you know, that when the bus was 5 minutes away. And, you know, because at the time, like Georgie had been born, I was staying home a little bit more. He was just getting better, like November, December. But prior to that, 5 minutes to go, Ryan would tell him, you know, time to get your shoes on, time to get your book bag. And he would not be into it. He would not. He was not interested. And crying and begging and pleading not to get on the bus. I remember his very first day of school, he was threatening that he was going to throw up if he had to get on the bus. And then fast forward to June, he was crying the last few nights because he didn't want school to be over. And I got to tell you, that is a remarkable turnaround. And it's just the kind of stuff that, like, you almost, it's like storybook, you know, it's like something out of a movie or a TV show to have that kind of a turnaround in a child from day one to the last day of school. But it was beautiful to see, and it made his mother and I very, very happy. And he got off the bus. There's this big bouncy house, which somehow we became the house whose front yard got the house, the bouncy house. But there's this big bouncy house in our front yard. He gets off the bus and he's clearly sad. And normally, you know, a bouncy house is like an instant cure for a kid, right? He would see that instantly good mood. And he kind of was indifferent to it for a couple of minutes. Then he insisted on doing schoolwork because the teacher gave them some like homework for the summer. It's really just like an activity book, you know, for the summer. He wanted so badly to sit down and do that activity book because he was so sad that school was over. Now, I will say this. He snapped out of it pretty quick. As soon as the other kids came over and everybody started jumping on the bouncy house, then he was all in. You know, then he was like, yeah, I'm good. And excuse me, a little sip of coffee there. And he was, he was all in at that point. But I mean, what a remarkable turnaround for that little man. I am just so dang proud of him. He is reading way beyond what we thought he would be reading. I don't know what's normal for a kid that just got out of kindergarten, but his reading skills seem really good to me. He even sounds out words with 3-4 syllables. You know, maybe that's behind, but I don't think I was there in kindergarten. What do I know? So, end of school officially upon us. Summer's here. I have more weekends free this summer than I have ever had since 2013. It's the last time I had the amount of free weekends that I have in 2025. Partially because with him being 6 and us having a baby now, it just wasn't fair to my wife for me to be working all weekend anymore. You know, at some point, you just got to adjust your life to the reality of what's really important. And then second of all, I had been hustling every weekend, farmers markets, festivals, all summer for years upon years upon years. And it was time, you know, it was time to say, hey, maybe we can do without. Maybe it'll be interesting to see what happens to the brand, to the business, without doing just weekly gigs. I'm nervous, if I'm being honest with you, very nervous about it. It feels to me like if I am not hustling every moment of every day, that I'm not trying hard enough, and that if I'm not trying hard enough, that I don't deserve success, and that if I don't get success, then I'm a failure. And that's my problem. You know, that's the type of shit that I am in therapy or need to in therapy about. Because it's not a healthy way of thinking. But if I sleep in on a Saturday and it's a Saturday where there's an event that we would have done every past year, I'm a little worried about this for me this year, frankly, that I'll wake up and I'll feel essentially useless. I don't like it. You know, I don't like it, but I got to get over it, and am looking very forward to having some of those free weekends just to be with my son, just to be with Leo, to be able to go to Seabreeze. You know, he loves Seabreeze. We have the season passes to Seabreeze. By the way, Seabreeze is easy to bring a baby to as well. You know, you walk around with the stroller, you put the diaper bag beneath it. Like, it's fine. It's great. It's frankly kind of easy. So this weekend, though, is pretty free. But unfortunately, I do have Monday morning to get on an airplane and go down to New York for the day. It's not like we're doing wheels up, wheels down all in the same day. So it's a work trip, but it's not like a work trip. We're going down to something called the Fancy Food Show, which is a lot of fun for my foodies who listen to this thing, man. This thing is a blast. And if you're just a regular person, you get in for like $100. Problem is they vet you. And I applied as a regular person, and they freaking busted me and said, no, you're a manufacturer. You're $700. Because manufacturers go to a place like this looking for clients is what it is. And I'm not going to lie. That's why I'm going. Of course it is. I've already made my target list. They've got a great app that you can do. And then the app, you can, you know, highlight what brands you want to talk to. And then it'll actually draw a map for you and help you figure out how to navigate the show to find the brands you want to talk to. And so, listen, I'm not going to lie and tell you I'm not. I am going there as a manufacturer. It is possible that I want to shake some hands and kiss some babies, hoping to attract some new business. So I was happy to pay the $700 because that's, you know, that's part of how they make their money. So, but anyway, going with a couple staff members, and if I can sleep in my own bed at night, I want to. So being that it's just New York, 45-minute flight, we're doing wheels up 6 a.m., wheels down 6 p.m., right back to Rochester. Gonna land, get in a cab, find breakfast, probably just get dropped off right there at the Javits Center. Find breakfast close. By the way, if anybody is a New Yorker listening to this, near the Javits Center, I think that's like Hell's Kitchen. Is it Hell's Kitchen? Is that what I'm thinking? I think it's like Hell's Kitchen-ish. I would love recommendations for breakfast for Monday morning. I need them quick, though, because this is tomorrow we're talking about here, Monday, June 30th. But anyway, yeah, then back to the, you know, 4 or 5 hours at the show, back to the airport. And then back in the air to Rochester, hopefully home in time to read to my son before he goes to sleep. So I'm looking forward to Fancy Food Show. Some really cool stuff, too, and some local Rochester brands down there, too. There is a ghee company called Ashi Ghee by a friend of mine named Ashna, who I'm a big fan of, also working with. She's a client of ours. There is Panacheza, which is a vegan Parmesan cheese based out of Rochester that'll be there. In the past, I've seen Special Touch Bakery and Zweigel's there. I did look them up on the directory and didn't see either one of them. However, that doesn't mean they won't be there. Maybe they're just under a different name. Like, a lot of times people are there under their true legal names. Like, for example, this business is called Craft Cannery. And my sauce is called Guglielmo Sauce, but our actual business is called LNK Holdings. So it's sometimes that happens where you just don't, you know, it's not the brand name. So anyway, maybe we'll see them there. Maybe we won't. There's another one. Is what did I see that I didn't know was a Rochester brand? Hold on. Before I remember the name, and before I say it out loud, I'm gonna make sure I'm not lying to you. I'm pretty sure this is local. Hold on. Wait for it. It is, where is this? Nope, I got it wrong. Never mind. It's one of those canned mocktail companies. Could have swore it was Rochester, but I'm wrong. They're out of Oregon. Not even close. Never mind. If I was any good at podcasting, I would edit out the last 30 seconds. But hey, here we are real. Speaking of real, let me get real for a second. Did you see the story that came out this week that the Revelry is becoming a barbecue restaurant? I would be remiss if I didn't admit to you that I got a little bit ticked off when I saw that make news. Why? You asking me why? Why? Because that news broke on this podcast in friggin' January. When Josh Miles was on this podcast, and now it's all of a sudden it's in the actual news, Revelry to become a barbecue restaurant. Come on, people. Got to get hip to this podcast. You would have had that news a long time ago. I did incorrectly put on Facebook that if you listen to this podcast, you had that news 2 months ago. Again, incorrect. 5 months ago. January. Had it in January. The real purpose, though, of today's podcast, the actual reason I'm recording, is because I want to reflect on a very significant year, and that is that I am, as of tomorrow's my last day technically as the president of the Rochester Rotary. It's finally over. I actually have my last obligation period tonight. I have a district changeover dinner that I'm going to, and then after that, I really am free of obligation as president. I become immediate past president, which has a little bit of obligation, but compared to the year as president, it is minuscule, the amount of obligation of the immediate past president. So I want to reflect on that a bit, but I also want to talk a little bit of business and tell you guys where I'm at right now business-wise, a couple things that are just causing me headaches. One of the things I would say, some positives and negatives before we get to reflecting about Rotary, that's going on in business right now, in my business. Positives are, I think right now I am very, very secure with the team that we have in place here at Craft Cannery, the people. We did one-on-ones this week, and that is, you know, half year, just time to catch up and really sit with everyone and just give some feedback and receive feedback as well about job performance. And I realized pretty much everybody that I sat across from, I had wonderful things to say about their job performance. And, you know, the feedback received back, there was some feedback, but there was no really hostile feedback. You know, I remember back in the day, man, you know, working in corporate and, man, those things were full of tough feedback. I just feel like I am so behind my team right now. I feel as though they're behind me. I am so impressed with these people, and I am so lucky to have them. That's a positive. Another positive is we have this new bottling line that is now only a month away from coming, which has been a huge deal. It's been over a year in the making. I will say, though, that that helps me sort of parlay this conversation into what's keeping me up at night right now, though, as a business owner, and that is the bottling line, because one, it seems a little in limbo in terms of the actual installation date. We're narrowed down to a week that we're looking at, but you know, I want to get that down to a day, and I want to be sure that that's not going to get pushed back also, which scares me quite a bit. Because it's not super uncommon when purchasing automation equipment, big equipment, that something like that would get pushed back. Also, something that has been a challenge has been selling capacity on that line, because you've got this new equipment, and anybody who's ever installed new equipment, I only know this because I did it wrong the last time, knows that you shouldn't plan on 100% efficiency on the line, frankly, ever 100%, but you shouldn't even plan to get to whatever you're aiming for, which we're generally aiming for, like, first shift, maybe 93% efficiency on the line. You shouldn't even plan to be able to get to 93% efficiency until, you know, 3 months of having it installed. So I've got this new line, I've got this new capacity, I've got these new capabilities, but I'm also hesitant to sell anything onto it, because the last thing I want to do is promise anybody anything and then not be able to deliver on it. Because frankly, in retrospect, a few years ago that did happen here when we had a bottling line installed, where I had people beating down my door to get on that line. And we were premature running it. We weren't good at it. We were making mistakes, quality issues. I mean, it was not good. It was probably the hardest time that we've ever had in this business in the last 5 years. So I just don't want to repeat now. We've got a lot more competency on our staff at this time, a lot more folks that have it within their skill set to run that kind of equipment. We have the rest of our staff who maybe haven't been working on equipment like that for decades. And we've got a couple people who have decades in, but the rest of them are at least have enough experience with the current automation equipment that they'll probably be able to translate some of those skills or transfer some of those skills over to the new line. So I'm pretty comfortable we'll get there sooner than later. But again, it would be unreasonable to expect us to get there on day one. So I'm looking at this new line and I'm going, okay, I want to sell the capacity that I have, but I also don't want to make any promises. And that, towing that line is harder than you think. It's harder than it should be. It's harder than it sounds. Towing the line between, I've got this new bottling line, yes, we can handle your demand, we just don't know when. It sounds terrible, right? But, you know, again, I'm holding out hopes for pretty quickly. Things supposed to be getting installed in late July. I'm hoping by September that we're running that thing and feeling like we're good at it, you know, because a lot of the stuff I'm lining up, it's really being lined up for fall. So I'm giving us some buffer to run that line. And I'm also not expecting us to run both lines at the same time for a little while either. That's another thing, is I want this place to be running two lines at the same time, but I feel as though it's probably the right thing for me to not be necessarily expecting that of my people on day one. You just take a month to get good at running this new line, and then let's start to introduce running both lines at once, you know. And we'll run into problems and equipment needed to make that happen and things like that. So trying to be realistic. Now, one other thing causing me stress right now is just the continued rise of costs. And there are things that are holding steady. There's things that have even gone down. But one of the things that just has never gone down and shows no signs of going down is the cost of offering benefits, health insurance specifically, to our employees. I am so proud to offer that. But I got to tell you, this Excellus Blue Cross Blue Shield is, in my opinion, it's not even just that company. It's just, these companies in general are out of control with the cost on health insurance in this country. They just sent us letters saying they are proposing a 28% price increase for next year. Now, for anyone who doesn't know this, they will propose that and get denied. They go big because what they want is probably something closer to 10%. And that's the way these negotiations often work for them. They have to negotiate whether or not that will be acceptable, a 28% price increase. They'll be told no, and they know they'll be told no. That's why they ask for 28%. But they will then end up getting a 10%, which of course gets passed on to you and me. And that's a double whammy when you're an employer. You're paying it as a insurance carrier, as just, you know, as a person, as an employee, I'm paying that, but I'm also paying the other half of it as the employer, and it's just rough. You know, it's just, it's that cost of living stuff that's just skyrocketing on all of us. It's something that it makes me very upset. I feel like in some cases I got across the finish line just in time, and in other cases I just missed getting across the finish line in time. And what I mean by that is, when it comes to having grown up without technology, without a cell phone in my face, without a computer in my living room, you know, I got across the finish line just in time. I got through my entire high school career. I got through my whole childhood all the way into college before cell phones. Not that before they were invented, but before they were something that everybody had. I got my first cell phone in college, and I remember very much so that my first cell phone was not really a luxury. It was more of a burden. It was more of a bring your cell phone with you just in case of an emergency. And that was a year or two. And then finally, towards the end of my college time is when like texting really became more of a thing. And then it was, you know, all over. But so in that case, I look at society and I go, man, I really got across the finish line just in time to allow my brain to develop without just being warped by technology. And you know, the damage that social media can do and all of that, I got through childhood without it. However, I look at financially what it costs to live a life, and I say, man, I got left just behind. You know, the generation before us, the Gen Xers, the boomers, really got to spend a majority of their adulthood living in a world where cost of living was reasonable. And I think the millennials are the first generation to just get left in the dust on that. And I feel terrible for Gen Z. I feel terrible for Gen Alpha, Gen Beta. You know, those are the babies being born right now. But there are real hard statistics and numbers that show you that the average salary compared to the average cost of living, and when I'm saying cost of living, I'm talking about what does it cost to buy a house? What does it cost to buy a week load of groceries? What does it cost to pay an electric bill? What does it cost to pay an internet bill? Which, by the way, those generations didn't have to deal with early on in their adulthood, right? What do all of those things cost comparatively to the average salary? And that gap is much wider than it was when those first couple of those older generations, the Xers and the boomers, were kids. It's just a much wider gap. I mean, the cost of a home compared to the average salary is crazy. And what it was when they were young. And I don't think they exercise enough empathy, frankly, the older generations. You know, I know I've come on here a couple of times and, you know, not been super nice about Gen Z and work ethic and attitude and stuff. But just to kind of go at the older generations a bit here, I also feel that there is a complete lack of empathy and understanding by older generations on just what it costs to live a life right now. I mean, I feel like boomers and even to an extent Gen X was given the opportunity to accumulate some wealth just by having the ability to get average paying jobs or, you know, even being able to work your way into a better job. I understand there's always been people who were living in poverty, people not making enough money. I know that existed even 30, 40, 50 years ago. Of course I know that. I'm talking about sort of on average. On average, if you were able to get an average job and live an average life. And when I say average life, I mean you're not necessarily living hand to mouth, but you're also not necessarily living in luxury. Maybe there's the occasional family vacation. Maybe it's not hamburger helper and macaroni and cheese every night. I get it. I get it that it's possible to cut corners. I know you can cancel Netflix. I know you don't need to have you know, steak once a month or whatever, and you know, buying expensive stuff. I know you don't need that salmon fillet at Wegmans when you could get by on, you know, frozen this or that. I get it. Some living of your life should be allowed. Not all of that should be considered luxury. Some of that is just average. So to go back again to just average income versus average cost of living, it is a giant disparity that did not used to exist. And I think that the older generations need to learn to exercise a lot more empathy, especially boomers. They were given the opportunity truly to accumulate wealth, to accumulate assets, to buy homes at reasonable prices. And now they look at young people and say, well, why can't you afford the same things I afford? It's because of your behavior. And that's a really tough argument to make because, sure, you can go through anybody's checking account and find a couple of expenses that are probably a little lavish. DoorDash, Netflix, sure. But to what extent can you tell somebody you can never have a frivolous expense? They need to be kept within reason, of course. But I do think there is a complete lack of empathy, especially from the boomers looking down on the younger generations saying, well, why can't you afford the same life I afforded? You know, I worked hard and I didn't buy things I didn't need. You also made a lot more money relative to what things cost. So you were buying things that were equivalent to or similar to the things that we are buying. It's just that it cost you a lot less money, especially relative to your income. All right, I feel like I'm just talking in circles around that point. But again, with the health insurance going up, I just continue to feel terrible for the working class right now, for you know, just average people. Again, I'm not talking about poverty. I'm not talking about rich. I'm talking about just average people. I think, you know, you got to make a lot of money. It's just depressing. Anyway, all right. I did want to reflect on my year as Rotary president. I am so excited to be able to do this and talk about this. I couldn't believe it. It was November of 2020. It would have been maybe 2022. Yes, I believe it was. No, was it 2023? Excuse me. Either November 22 or 23. I got an email from Scott Rasmussen from Golisano Children's Hospital, Rotarian, past president. And he said, can you meet me for breakfast at Charbroil? I need to pick your brain on a couple of things. And I thought, Scott wants to pick my brain? I can't believe it. I showed up to Charbroil. Scott met me at the front door. I thought to myself, Scott, it's not that big of a restaurant. I would have found you. It's okay. But that's okay. I appreciate that you met me at the door. He met me, though, because he wanted to make sure the big reveal was done properly. And what I mean by that is he walked me into the restaurant. I came around a corner, and I thought I was having breakfast with Scott Rasmussen, but instead, I came around that corner and saw a table full of past presidents, and I knew exactly what was happening. I was either being ordained or I was being fired, so I sit down, and these people proceed to just make small talk that has nothing to do with what I think we're here to talk about for a good 15 minutes, and I am dying inside. And then finally, somebody says to me, well, we were talking, and we thought maybe you'd make a good president. What do you think? And put my head in my hands, shed a tear or two, looked back up and said, yes, absolutely yes. And they said, don't you want to ask your wife first? And I said, okay, all right, let me ask my wife first. But I know she'll be okay with this, and she'll encourage this. And then I went on a ride of a lifetime, man. It was, you know, a year and a half of being president-elect, and then president-elect, and got to go to Singapore and Japan and sit in on every single committee and really learn how to do the job from Jeff Halleck, who came before me. And for those of you who don't know me or know Jeff, that's the guy who also listens to the podcast and said, hey, you need to shorten the intro. And so I got to watch this man for a year be the Rotary president, knowing I needed to step into his shoes. And what I learned in that year was that that man can accomplish anything he wants. He is that smart. He is that professional. And he's just a smooth guy. He can talk to anybody. And so if he says cut the intro, I cut the intro. See what I'm saying? But anyway, I watched him for a year, and then the year came up, and it was time for me to take the reins as president, remain on every committee, really take charge at lunch. And they tell you, you know, just pick a couple of things. Pick a project and pick a focus. Because it is tempting when you come into a large organization like Rochester Rotary, just under 400 members, dozens of committees, a Sunshine Camp, School Number 8, International Service, Community Service. It's really tempting to try to do about 30 things. If you spread yourself too thin and you try to do 30 things, you won't do any of them well. In order to have a lasting impact as president, the advice was pick one or two things and concentrate on doing them well. And then beyond that, for the other 30 things, trust the people who are in charge to run those things. Everybody in Rochester Rotary is a professional at the top of their game. So anybody who's in charge of a committee or getting a project done is somebody who has been doing this for a living for years and years and can be trusted. So I took two things. I said, okay, I want to build a handicap accessible garden at Sunshine Camp. That idea came to me when Erica Cooper, a Rotarian who I actually asked to serve on the board my year and is continuing to serve a four-year board term, she came to me and actually gave me that idea. I knew I wanted to do a project, but I didn't know what the project would be. And when she said garden, I thought of my grandfather, and I thought, that's perfect. So I will always credit her with having kind of fed me that idea. And then she and I worked on getting it built and making it happen, and now it exists, a handicap accessible garden at Sunshine Camp, and it's beautiful. And then for focus, I said, you know, I'm going to kind of go back to my radio strengths, and my focus is that I want every single thing to be compelling. Fun, usually, but just compelling. I want people to really remember the experiences they have anytime they attend anything that we do and have a great time. And I have to tell you, I think we accomplished that. I have a couple of regrets, a couple of things I wish I did better. Number one, I think I committed a really big sin at Rotary Award. Rotary Award is this thing where we give an award to a community member for civil service, for civic service. And this year we got to honor Justin Vigdor, who passed away shortly after that, actually. He was in his 90s at the time and one of the founders of the Fringe Festival. And he was one of the founders, actually, of Mary Cariola, which is incredible to think of that because that's, I mean, to have been around back when that started. And some other things, too, that I'm forgetting. Opportunity for legal representation for folks who can't afford legal representation. Just did a ton of good charity work in his years. And one of my regrets was that I had the opportunity to speak at that event. And, you know, for like 1 minute. And I went up there and I tried to be funny. I tried to make a joke. But worst of all, I made it about myself. He's a Jewish man, Justin Vigdor. So I went up there and I said something about like, hey, what does it mean when they call me, you know, Goyim or something, which I think just means not Jewish. And Ronnie Malik, my friend from Boston Bagels, always calls me a Goyim or a Goy, whatever. And I know that that just means I'm a regular, I'm not a Jew, right? That's what that means. So I went up there and I started making jokes about what does that mean when they call me Goyim? And it wasn't that event. It just wasn't right. It wasn't the right tone. It wasn't funny. Nobody laughed. Like, it was supposed to be about Justin, and I just keep pulling my hair out going, God, I screwed that up, you know? It is sort of just like honoring 101. Anytime you're honoring somebody and you've been asked to speak, do not make it about yourself. That is absolutely speech-giving 101. If you are honoring someone else, do not make it about yourself. And I went up there and I made it about myself, and I will remember that forever because that was a screw-up. I did that wrong. You know, then one other one, and this one wasn't as big of a screw up, but another one was my very last meeting just this past Tuesday. I had written a little bit about what I wanted to say during my goodbye speech, but I also winged it kind of at the end. And instead of having it written down, I knew what I wanted to say. I had four or five things I wanted to say, and I said about two of them. And I just been kicking myself because I keep going, man, I just wish I had, you know, in my head, I was rehearsing that speech for days before I gave it. And then in the moment, I got caught up in the moment and just kind of, I got a couple of the things out that I wanted to say, and they were really the most powerful ones, which was good. But there was one or two other things I really wanted to say. I just didn't get in there. So other than those couple of things, I am really proud of how this year went. I mean, we had a dynamic speaker lineup, you know, Giovanni Ledestri, Tom Golisano, Bob Duffy, Vinny Esposito, the CEO of Kodak, CJ Rapp, Patti Leva. I mean, just the list, Erica Rogers, like the list and list and list of successful. Tom Bonadio. How about Ernie Clement, who's got, last time I looked, he's got like the 12th best batting average in Major League Baseball right now. He spoke at Rochester Rotary over the winter. I mean, we had a hell of a speaker lineup that I am so insanely proud of. So proud of. And I just, you know, I really feel and hope that I made them proud, that I made Rochester Rotary proud. I have to tell you, my absolute favorite moment of the year was my reception, presidential reception, where instead of going somewhere for dinner or drinks, we went to Sunshine Camp and I made sauce for 100 people. That was the thrill of a lifetime. The whole thing was a thrill of a lifetime. I will never forget it. I'm not fully done yet. As I said, I do have this dinner I have to go to tonight, district changeover dinner. And then my next year, I do have technically have a role, immediate past president. I stay on the board. And beyond staying on the board, I think I'm the head of the nominating committee. Very light lift compared to presidential year, but nonetheless, still a little bit relevant. But then after that, complete irrelevance, you know? After that, you just go away. It's not, just kidding. For the past presidents listening right now, I'm just kidding. But I do feel like a few years from now, I'm going to be at a Rotary meeting. And there's going to be some new Rotarians saying, you know, and who are you? And I'm going to go, I used to be somebody. All right. Anyway, thrill of a lifetime. And all I can really say is I hope I made them proud. I thank you for listening. I hope you have a wonderful holiday week this week. Happy 4th of July. Enjoy. As I think I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, I think because of the holiday, it's really likely that we're going to get a couple monologue episodes in a row here. I think it's really likely next Sunday will be just me. But yeah, but appreciate you listening so much. Have a great week. We'll talk soon.